Thursday, the 10th of January, Gimel Shvat, Rabbi Svi Velovsky, Parshas Bo, How Hebrew is Special. And the last two sections of Parshas Bo deal with the mitzvah tefillin. And as we know, these two parshas appear in tefillin. And we're going to use a strange word, which is familiar to everyone, as a springboard for discussion about a broader subject. And that is the word totofoys. The Pasuk says, "V'ho'yol o'isal yodachol totofoys be'ninecho." This is the first time this word appears. It shall be a sign upon your hand, and for totofoys between your eyes, ki b'chozek yod hoitzionu Hashem min Yitzrayim, because God brought us out from Egypt with a strong hand. So this word totofoys is a bit strange. It doesn't look like Hebrew. It doesn't really sound much like Hebrew. The Unklus renders it into tefillin, which is presumably where the word tefillin comes from. Ve'hel os al yidochol is tefillin bein enoch, the word tefillin. So tefillin perhaps is really associated with the word tefillah. It has some devotional kind of value. It's a container with some devotional perspective. The question is, what does the word totofoys actually mean? And so we'll come shortly to a Gemara in the first book of Sanhedrin, which you may know. It's interesting, the sources which we would describe as late Rishonim, early Achronim, the Abar Benel and Tzraya Meir, who are late 15th, early 16th century, they say that it's an Egyptian word. This is not a popular viewpoint. The Abar Benel, the Eshonim, who Shem Mitzrim, Shenikra Moyach Kain. According to the Abar Benel, in the particular Egyptian dialect that they may have spoken, this is a brain object, and totofoys means something that goes on the head, something which attaches itself to the brain. And the Tzraya Hamoyer gives a slightly different explanation, but he said it does actually, could well be an Egyptian word, that it's something which you'll look at, it looks like a crown coin, which is beautiful, but be as it may, according to these sources, the word totofoys may well be Egyptian. That opens up a whole can of worms, of course, rendering it into Egyptian. But suddenly, the Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu, doesn't have a good word in Hebrew, like he has all the rest of the words. He finds it necessary to suddenly dip into Egyptian, and then return. And there are many discussions about these sorts of points. We have Yagas Gal Eid, about which clearly is an Aramaic word, but that's easier to understand in the context of the story of Lot and Yaakov, the end of Parshas Vayetzeh, because there it's about a dialogue, and Lot refers to the thing in his own language. It's sort of easier to understand in the context. The Rambam struggles also. He says it's not clear where this word comes from. Ein lemila hazois mishpacha yudua. This does not have a known family, meaning I'm struggling. He offers various possibilities, he is struggling, as the other grammarians are, to understand this word. But if you render it into Hebrew, you've got to justify a Hebrew root. And if you render it into some other language, Egyptian, like the Tzraya Meir and the Abar Benel do, well, then you've got difficulties of a more kind of a conceptual and overall nature. Now, Rashi quotes a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Daf Dalet on the base in Sanhedrin, Tanya, the totofoys, it refers to this pasuk appears three times, once in Shemois and twice in Devarim, this word. And the way it's written, sometimes with a vav, sometimes without, it comes up to four. So it's used to understand, to verify the tradition, the Torah Shebaal Peh, that it is a container that has four sections. Very interesting. Rabbi Akiva Omer Ein Tzorich. Rabbi Akiva, you don't need to delve into that kind of reasoning to read the word, because tot b'kat fei shtayim, pat pos b'afriki shtayim, because the word tot means two in Caspian, whatever language that may be, and the word pos means two in African, whatever type of African language that may be, and that's not a problem, because the word totofoys means something made of two and two, which is four. So you don't need to start saying totofoys with a vav, without a vav, two singular, one plural, totofoys. You don't need to go into that to Rabbi Akiva. So what is Rabbi Akiva saying here? What is he saying? I mean, are we saying, does the Torah have a perfectly good Hebrew word that's starting with four sections? There must be a word for an object containing four sections, and if not, I mean, this is just absolutely bizarre. is absolutely bizarre, and it's something which we'll read the Rashi, who Rashi quotes this, and we'll probably, Rashi does attempt to find some kind of Hebrew root for the word, but really he comes to his primary explanation is just quoting this Gemara in the inside of the four sections 2 and 2, because it's a Caspian 2 stuck to an African 2, giving a total of 4. And so this is really extremely difficult to decide what to do with it, because either way we look, we either have a grammatical problem, or we have a significant conceptual difficulty, but somehow or other the Torah chooses to dip into other languages, which probably is problematic for us. Just to sort of deal with this specific issue and then use it as a platform for a broader discussion, I mean, it's interesting, the word hain, for example, is used as a Gemara in Moed Cotton. It means chad, it means one, hin. Shekein b'loshoni yavoni koren la'achas hin. Hin means one in Greek. Is that another example of the same thing? That suddenly there's no word for one in Hebrew. We have to dip, in context, use a Greek word. So the classic explanation, the classic way of dealing with this, is a Shelah Kodesh. The Shelah offers an explanation with which we'll have to manage, at least for the time being. The Shelah quotes this Gemara in Sanhedrin. He says, Al yale b'datecho, sha'tere kosfa eila haloshoyna she'ein loshen kodesh. Do not allow yourself to think that the Torah is writing words in languages other than in Hebrew. Elohochi pirushoy, this is how it is to be understood. G'shabora ha'kodesh boruchu olomoy, lo hoyu rak loshen ha'kodesh. When God created his world, there was only Hebrew. Kamosha Kosov Rashi Zabakamaduchti, as Rashi observes in many places. We can just pause that for a moment and think of the episode of the Migdal Bovel, the Doa Flogger at the end of Parshas Noach, where Sofa Achas, the single language of the world prior to the dispersal, is identified as Hebrew, as Loshon HaKodesh, Rashi says that there. As well, and it's based on a Tanchuma, it's a Tanchuma Yud Tes in Parshas Noach, the one the Potter says, Hovener de Venubulus Fosom, come, let's go down and confound their languages. Bilbul Shonis Loyovin Echod Nehem Loshon Shol Chaveroi. Bilbul here means that each one will be unable to understand his fellow. Shaloshon Arishon Hoyumadabrin. Beloshen HaKodesh, Uboi Beloshen Nivro HaOilom, says the Tanchuma, which means that the original language that everyone spoke was Hebrew, and that was the language with which the world was created. Now, there isn't time for a lengthy discussion of this, but we are familiar with the fact that Hebrew is an intrinsic language. And we're going to come back to that very shortly, and that will explain to us why it may be that this is the way HaKodesh Baruch Hu creates the world. Let's just finish the Shelah, and then I want to steer us into a Machlokes Rishonim. Now the Shelah finishes his piece. When God confounded the languages at the generation of the dispersal of Parshas Noach, Voshna Kodesh, the gun came Bishar Haloshonis. There was now Hebrew and other languages too. Batebus Hanal, and the aforementioned words, our Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tot and Fot, these words, Haim Loshen Kodesh, they are Hebrew. V'nivlu b'lashon yavoni obakasi of Afriki, and they have become immersed, they become mixed up in Greek, Caspian or African. So what is the Shelah, at the end of the Shelah? He appears to be saying that what the way the Gemara is to be read is that not to suggest that the Torah uses foreign words, but these words are Hebrew words that are unfamiliar, since they have been lost to general usage and therefore the reader doesn't understand what they mean, he refers you to their current usage in other languages, which can be traced to their origin in Hebrew, and therefore you can understand what they mean, not chas v'sholom, he might say, certainly not like the Abba Benelo, the Torah HaMorah say, not that they are of non-Jewish origin, but they are of Hebrew origin, but are disused. And the only way we can identify them and understand them is by referring to other languages in which they are still in current use, at least in the time of the Gemara. That appears to be what the Shiloh is saying. This is something which, you know, it's a very well-known outreach tool. Outreach rabbis speak about this idea, the beauty of the Hebrew language, about the way Hebrew is constructed, about the way the letters work, and the way that, where the syllables work, and the way the roots work, and to find traces of Hebrew concepts in other languages. And the most well-known one, and that's the only one again, because we haven't got much time, is the word for water, mayim. And so the word mayim is always in plural. There's no singular word in Hebrew for water, even though in our languages it's in the singular. The word mayim appears to be the plural of the word ma. It is a collection of what is it, if you like. What does that mean? Well, if you look in the Hashkafas for it, particularly the Maharal, water, liquid, is understood to be the paradigm of something that has choma but no tzura. Something which is completely formless. It takes the shape of whatever you put it in. It has no intrinsic tzura form at all. And therefore, in its uncontrolled form, water is, well, what is it? It doesn't have any particular identity. It will just take the shape. It will run wherever you put it. Mayim. It is a collection of whats, if you like. And I've heard it said that this concept has found its way into other languages. For example, what is the Latin word for water? It is aqua. Qua means what? That's very interesting, right? Water, Wasser, right? Wasser, right? Right? What is it? And so on. It is very interesting. This may be a peculiar coincidence. And I'm sure that if there were any kind of philologists or whatever here, they would probably tell me, I know what I'm talking about. However, it is very interesting to see this concept. Water does appear to be very similar. It comes from the same root of the German Wasser, and so on. Very interesting. Just for consideration, there are other such examples, and that would bear out the Shiloh's reading, that one can find traces of Hebrew words or the way that Hebrew looks at the world in other languages. And what the Gemara is doing is inviting us to look back at the original Hebrew to understand the word. I'm not quite sure this is actually... a non-Hebrew word. So it's a machlokes. It's actually a machlokes in early sources in the Rishonim or the early Achronim as to whether or not the Gemara is telling us these are foreign words or they are lost Hebrew words that can only be identified within other languages. So let's pause that for a moment. This idea about the special nature of Hebrew is something, as I said, which is widely taught and is considered to be a prime outreach tool. But actually, it's a machlokes between the Rambam and the Kuzari. What the nature of Hebrew is that I've heard it said, and this is quite a convincing explanation, at least according to the Kuzari, but you'll see not according to the Rambam, that Hebrew is unique. In that it is a system of concepts. The letters, syllables, and roots represent a system of concepts which are all plugged together. And if you were clever enough, and you properly understood what each letter means, then you would understand what a syllable meant, because you have two concepts plugged together. And once you understood that, you could work out what the whole word means. You would never need a dictionary. You'd be able to look at the words, and you'd be able to work out what they mean. This is to do with the intrinsic nature of Hebrew, but words in other languages express not some intrinsic idea, but they express that they are a convenience. They are a social convention. There is nothing table-like about this table. It's just that when I say the word table, since we all agree what a table is, we can use it as a means of communication. It could just as easily be called a chair, and as long as we all agree that this is now called a chair, we can communicate successfully. And the understanding of what happened at Migdal Bovel is that there was some kind of universally agreed convention of language, and then the Kodesh Baruch Hu changed the way people look at the world, and the way Reb Tzadok HaKohen might read the Bilvul of Bovel, if you like, is not that one started speaking French, and another started speaking Hindi. That's not an advanced way of understanding the story. Is that actually they may well still have all spoken some original language. It's just that the way they look at the world, which is expressed through the language, was different, such that there were subtle distinctions which became much larger distinctions in the way they comprehended the world, expressed themselves, utilized language, and therefore there's no possibility of communication. But Solik speaks about this in various places. Now, let's go back to this disagreement. See, the Rambam, there's a well-known piece in the Rambam, actually, in Shemois Lamed Gimel, where he quotes the Moreh Nevuchim in Chelek Shlishi. And in this Chelek Shlishi, the Rambam starts talking about the nature of Hebrew. Now, this is part of a much bigger discussion, which is that the Rambam does not appear to believe in intrinsic Kedusha for anything. Apart from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is nothing which is intrinsically holy. This is one part of the machlokis between the Rishonim as to whether there are things in this world which are simply kalim, receptacles for Kedusha, opportunities to be used in a way to help a human being reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or that's kalim, or whether there is such a thing as Atzma Yusashel Kedusha. Whether there is intrinsic holiness, whether there are things, and the examples that one might discuss are the Hebrew language, the distinction between Jew and non-Jew, the distinction between Eretz Yisrael and other places. Are these places intrinsically holy? And it's not so clear from the Gemara early sources which one might go for, and the Rambam is well known for his rationalist position, that he really holds that everything is kalim. There is no Atzmi Yusashel Kedusha Bechlal, there is no intrinsic holiness except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore he has to find, why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? Why is Hebrew distinct from other languages? If we take a more kind of metaphysical approach, as we'll see in the Kuzari, we've got an answer. And the way in which we have been taught to approach Hebrew, it comes from the Kuzari. Now, the Kuzari predates the Rambam, and very often the Rambam is kind of fighting against the Kuzari, or at least the Kuzari-type way of looking at the world. So, the Rambam says, and if you're interested in the record, it's Chelek Shlishi Perek Ches of the Moreh Nevuchim, Tavah Sibba B'Kriyas L'Shoineinu Zer L'Shon HaKodesh. What's the reason why we call our language the holy language? So he says, do not assume it's some distinct in some intrinsic way. Right? Actually, the way it works is as follows. And it's very strange, and the Rambam quotes this and doesn't like it. By the way, I didn't get this in the Moreh Nevuchim. I saw it in the Rambam, and then I went back to the Moreh Nevuchim. And he says, Loshon HaKodesh lehunach boy shein klal lechlem mishko loy min hanoshim v'loy min hanoshim v'loy loguf hamaisa hamei v'lo hilodah v'lo lezera v'lo liyitzia. He says Hebrew has no words for things that we might broadly call rude. He has no rude words. The reason why Hebrew is holy is because it has no words for the reproductive organs, whether of the male or the female, nor for the act of intimacy, nor for what he calls zera, because zera, of course, is a euphemism. It's not actually a word for it. It's used for other things as well. Nor for zera, nor for the emergence. Anyway, he goes through various things, that all the things that are associated with intimacy, with reproduction, Hebrew uses euphemisms, uses words that don't really mean what it says, but we know what they mean. That is his difference. That distinguishes Hebrew as far as he's concerned. That Kabbalah was there. She'ela ha'davorim eim roi l'zochrom. It's not appropriate to mention these things. And since it's not necessary to mention them directly, the fact that Hebrew doesn't have words in that way is very, very interesting. And I think we would regard in our times a relatively obscure way of distinguishing Hebrew from other languages. There's one or two other, but they're very extrinsic. One or two other small distinctions. Now, the Rambam doesn't like this very much. And he suggests that the reason why it is holy is because this is the language that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks with. This is the language with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai. I'll read you a little. Why do then do the rabbis, as far as I'm concerned, refers to our language as Loshon HaKodesh, Shumipnesha Divri HaTorah V'HaNevuas, V'Chol Divri Kedusha Kulam L'Shoin HaHu Nemru, because the words of the Torah, the prophecies, all holy things, are communicated in this language. V'Neo HaLoshon SheHaKodesh Baruch Yisaleh Shemoy Medaber Boy Im Nevi'ov V'Im Adosoy. This is the language which HaKodesh Baruch Hu uses to speak with his prophets, and to speak with his holy, with his holy nation. Onuchi lo yelakor the shadibrus hatorah b'hanavua. And God is described in this language as well. We have words. The closest we can get to understanding the inscrutable is through Akadosh Baruch Hu. The word God does not really communicate properly what we know about Akadosh Baruch Hu. So the closest we can get to knowledge of the divine is through the Hebrew words that describe Akadosh Baruch Hu. He makes a list of names. And we also understand the angels and other forces through their Hebrew words and so on. So he understands there's something special about Hebrew. He doesn't really say why this language is chosen. But he says what distinguishes it from other languages, not as the Rambam says, because it hasn't got word for certain things, but because it's the language that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used, and we would follow, I suppose, as well, assuming that we take on board the Medrash Tanachum in Parashas Nach, it's the world with which the language with which God created the world, and so on. Now, the Kuzari. The Kuzari, which perhaps is what the Rambam was really writing against in the Moreh Nevuchim, the Kuzari is really the father of the way that we have been taught to look at Hebrew. Ach haloshoynas v'hamichtovim, when it comes to languages and alphabets, yesh ksosom yisron al ksosom, some have advantages over others. Some have an aesthetic value. There, you know, I don't know whether we can talk about such things in this place, but I think that we may agree that trying to sing an opera in German will be rather different than singing it in Italian. There is something about the way languages work that they lend themselves to certain aesthetic experiences. That's what he's speaking about, the aesthetic value of language. Some languages are extremely accurate in their way, some are more romantic in their description, some are more aesthetic reasons, some are more guttural, and so on. He's aware that they have aesthetic value as well. Remember, Chokim, I say, and some are less aesthetically pleasing. Valoshin ho Elokis. By the way, if you want the reference, it's Maimer Dalad Ois Chof Hei in the Kuzari. Loshin Elokis Haberua Asher Londo Elokim LeOdom. If you want to understand the holy language with which God communicates with man, he believes Sofik Hashleim Mekol Avashoynes Ban Ois LeKoreha Yose Mechulon. He says, without question, it is the most perfect of languages, and it is the one which is most pleasant to say of all of them. So it has the best mode of expression, and it is the most aesthetically attractive. And I quote the Pasuk in Bereshit, V'chol asher yikra lo ha'odom nefesh chayahu shmoi, whatever Odom named the animal, that became its name. Rotzoloma, that it means to say, Shuroi l'shem ha'hu, the name fitted it. It describes it in an intrinsic way. This is where the Kuzari says that Hebrew is an intrinsic language. And again, since I've already overstepped the line by referring to opera, I can also mention Wittgenstein, if you wish. Wittgenstein dedicated most of his academic activities to discussing the nature of language. He actually changed his mind in the middle of his career about whether language is intrinsic or extrinsic, about whether whether languages have got some inbuilt, there is some inbuilt meaning to the words that are used, or that they are simply arbitrary labels. And Lahavdil, this is really what the Kuzari is describing. He's already decided hundreds of years before Wittgenstein that Wittgenstein is both right and wrong. Other languages do not have this intrinsic nature, and Loshon HaKodesh does. Right? It means when Odom named the animals, Roy L'Shemahu, V'noyesla Melamed Altivoi. This word that was used to describe it taught something about its essence, about its very nature. This only exists in Hebrew, and then he goes on to talk about it. But that's all that we need to see from it. That it's melamed al tivoi, that the word describes the things intrinsically. This is part of a much broader disagreement between the Rambam and the Kuzari about Atzmius HaShel Kedusha and Kedusha. Here Hebrew becomes intrinsically distinct. There's something innately special about it. Not just in the way it's used, like the Rambam, that's Kalim, but in its very nature. Now there isn't a great deal more time, and really the purpose of the Shia was that we should see this disagreement and use the discussion, because we're assuming that the Shlo HaKodesh, without question, is not going like the Rambam. The Shavuot understands that there is something special about Hebrew. It has to be that these words are Hebrew, and he has to find some explanation which is consonant with Hebrew, if you like, invading every area of experience, being basics of that understanding of the world, and so on. Because if he doesn't do that, then he's back with the Abarbanel, and whom he's, writing against. Now, some of the later authors discuss this subject in some detail. The Sfas Emes writes about it. The Chidor, this is just references, I'm not getting much time. The Tells Rosh Shiva, there's some interesting stuff in Shiri Das, and there's also some stuff in the Sokhachov, in the Shem Shmuel, and probably in lots of other authors as well. Now, the Sfas Emes takes very much the line of the Shalor and kind of combines it with what the Kuzri says. So the Sfas Emes in Parshas Miketz. Yuvan al piyam medrash hoil Moshe be'er. This is referring to the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Devarim. Moshe began, and Chazal say, b'shivim loshem. He begins to expound the Torah in 70 languages. Are we to understand that that means that he first gets up and he gives his address of Devarim in Loshon HaKodesh, and then he says it in Sanskrit, and then he says it again in Japanese? Is that what we're supposed to understand? And if not, presumably not, then what does it mean? Right? Pirushalahem, ki kolo ayin losho mispashtim miloshon hakodesh. He's saying all of the 70 languages of the world, they all come, they originate, they have come from loshon hakodesh. Ki ator knows and chaim lechol haloshoynes. The Torah and the languages that give life to all the other languages. It is the life force of other languages. This is following the line of the Shalom. Heim rakamoy levushim. These other languages are like clothing. There's a concept that lies in them, which has been created by Hebrew, which comes right back from Migdal Bovel, and the current language, whether it's Japanese or Sanskrit, to use my examples, those languages have clothed it. They might obscure it. They might, if you like, shroud it in some kind of ideology, as we'll see in a moment. But what the Torah means to say is that Moshe says the Torah in a way that will be accessible to everyone in all times, no matter how the language develops. It will be accessible and comprehensible. Not that he said it 70 times in 70 different languages. As he said elsewhere, Parshas Noach, which is on the Migdal Bovel, Ki Loshon HaKodesh Shorosh Kol HaLoshonos, Sfas Emes again. Hebrew is the root of all language. Ki Ikar Yisrael HaMadam HaMekoyach HaNeshama. It is the soul speaking, and the soul is expressed much more clearly and much more directly through the Kalim, through the usage of Hebrew. Now we're nearly at the end. What is interesting is that I'll just finish with a Shem Shmuel with a Sokhachava, he explains based on a Chidush HaRim, which is interesting, that's where the Sfas Emes of course is getting it from as well. And the Chidush HaRim of Ger was a friend and co-Talmud of the Kotzka of his father, the Avni Nezer. So he says that there, and this is perhaps a good thought on which to finish, is that there is a symbiotic interaction between the use of language and the way people think. The language itself, and the Shira Das, as Hills Rosh Shiva discusses this as well, the language, the concepts may be very deeply buried. If we accept the Sfas Emes that they come from Hebrew originally, the way to look at the world, but this has been distorted by a nation's ideology. And the way one speaks, he even said not just the words that are used, but the style of language, even the way in which the words are expressed, the pattern of the language, all of that express an ideology. And when you use a language, you are not just using the words, communicating the words, you are also to some degree buying into the way that nation sees the world. So beware. And he said it works both ways. Not only does the way we look at the world affect the language, but the use of language, the way we formulate things, affect the way we look at the world. And so both the Shira Das and the Shem Shmuel speak about this. And then he gives this very specific and not enormously polite example. He said, I'll give you an example. Uchomoshe higid hachidushi harim migur, shaloshin sorfas mosheches leniuf. I'll give you an example. French is good for sexual misbehavior. That's just what he said. That, I mean, it's a fairly blunt, and fairly blunt. And he says, "Uladati atam mishum ha'uma hatarfis." He said, for example, because the French nation, "Mushkois betinuf zeh yosim mikol ha'umas." They are the experts in this field of human activity, and therefore the language, the mode of expression. Now, unfortunately, I can quote this in the name of someone else. and don't have to get into trouble over it, and he uses it as an example. And then he finishes by saying, having explained this, beware, the way we use language shrouds the concepts in the ideology of the people who develop the language. And so I may well be giving this speech in English, but we should it's horrible English, if you like. One should be aware that the way in which the ideas are formulated and communicated are affected by the way the English-speaking world looks at the world. So he finishes off that he quotes from the Kotzke, his grandfather, and this is where we'll finish. When he was a child, there was a ruling in his town that one was not allowed to get married unless one could take a language test. I mean, unless you could speak the local language, Polish, they lived in Poland, unless you could demonstrate proficiency in Polish, they wouldn't give you a marriage license. Obviously, to tempt the Jews, to force the Jews. So he said, so it became the practice to teach children Polish, right? When he discussed it, he said, Mashkiach al atzmoy. He didn't say, don't do it. He said, however, Mashkiach al atzmoy. He was constantly supervising himself. Chazelo yazik loy. That this will not harm him, because he would realize he'd begin to think like a Pole. And he doesn't want to think like a Pole, so he needs to keep thinking all the time in the framework of Lashon HaKodesh to ensure that the ideas and ideology remain pure. Have a good day.